If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click donate.
Yo, 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 what up, what up, what up, what up? This is Mike Crenshaw. Once again, you are tuned into News from the Boo, a biweekly news segment hosted by myself. And I always have different guests, news from in and around the K-Boo community. Tonight I have my comrade, partner in crime, fellow artist, Micah Fletcher. What's up, Micah?
What's up?
I'm good, brother. We're excited. We're going to talk to you about some music. We're going to share some music because, you know, the art that we create kind of bridges the gap between a few different layers of consciousness. Not in the least is social justice consciousness. You know, a history of anti-racist activity on an organized level. So, Micah, man, tell me a little bit about your involvement with this project, which, by the way, is called Last of a Dying Breed.
Right. So we just got done releasing an album on the brink of distinction. It's on Spotify. It's on iTunes. It's on all the major platforms. This project kind of came out of a combination of different scenarios. Me getting stabbed, me writing a lot about it. You being an artist for 30 plus years, me looking up to you, me finally summoning the audacity to ask you to be involved in a project.
Okay.
And like over time, at first, my base assumption, as with most things, is that eventually you would finally get annoyed enough that you'd be like, so this has been great. It's been a pleasure, Micah.
Right.
But this just isn't going to work out.
Right.
But instead, like, there was a sort of a chemistry, even with slight bouts of dysfunction in between, that I did not expect to occur. And, it's just led to something fruitful to me, at least spiritually and mentally.
Yeah, man, and that's what I look for when I do projects, is something that's going to feed me spiritually and mentally. But, being a working-class individual who has a family, who has responsibility, we do want to get paid for our labor. And I think it's important to note that one of the responsibilities that I'm hoping to take care of with this project is to actually meet the needs and the expectations of being a professional hip-hop artist that I actually haven't met yet. So I'm taking over 25 years of experience that, for better or for worse, I want to work smarter.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that the people can pick up on that in the way that they respond to this project.
Yeah, well, and that's actually a fascinating aspect to all of this that I didn't see coming, was the necessity for me to learn how to set healthy boundaries, both professionally and personally in my life. Mm. There have been a couple of times, some that I might not have even spoken of, where, like, we had something coming up and somebody tried to pull some shystiness, and where I just kind of had to be like, look, listen, I need you to understand something, boss. Like, this is not a charity. We're not a charity. This isn't a 501(c)(3). We don't have no paperwork. There's no write-off for this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is our lives. Both of us come from a background of work and everything, from trades to odd jobs to now I, much like you back in the day, am about to become a bouncer. We are not the kind of human beings that put in effort and expect nothing in return. In fact, quite the opposite. The entire purpose of putting in effort is that we can build a foundation that we could then utilize to one day hopefully do some more good and spread the wealth around.
Word up. So, like, you, when we were in the studio working on the record, one of the things you did is you took the responsibility of naming the project Last of a Dying Breed. You suggested that name. Can you tell the people who are listening why that resonated with you?
Oh yeah, like, I mean, in Portland at a minimum, I'm not going to speak on everywhere else, but at Portland at a minimum, I've watched basically everybody I grew up with disappear. And I am whether I like it or not, a sum total of the culture, the lessons, the experiences of the people that raised me. So the fact that so many of them, again, almost all of them, no longer live in this town, and the fact that you turn out to also come from a very similar background, had moved here, had invested in the community, had built part of the culture that I had grown up with without me even knowing it, I looked at the pair of us and I said, we really are kind of a very large portion of all that's left of old Portland.
Mm-hmm.
Disturbing as I thought though that might be. And as I thought of that, I'm like, I'm listening to the project, I'm listening to what we're talking about, and I'm realizing I don't really hear other people saying what we're saying. Not really.
Mm-hmm.
They might allude to it, they might say it in their personal media as a little snippet here or there, but it's not the focal point. It's not the center. The center is not, we live in a society that is sucking us dry like the vampires they are. That's a really good song Mike made. You should listen to it. And at the end of the day, the vampires gotta go, man. Vampires gotta go. And so, at the end of the day, the only thing that I could really come up with as a decent name for the first project is being on the brink of distinction, and the only thing I could come up with as a good summarizing name for what we're doing is that we are the last of a dying breed.
Okay. So, being that, Last of a Dying Breed is the name of the group that you and I form. Brink of Distinction is the name of the album that was released this week on June 15th. And in a second, I want to play a single, one of the singles for which there's a video. But there's a lot of consciousness to what you say. I've listened to your spoken word, okay? And to me, being a spoken word artist and being an MC are, there's a lot of intersections, but to a lot of people, right, because things have been divided into genres and right, sold accordingly. People don't always recognize the similarities or really the sameness about it.
Right.
That said, what you talk about, there's an intense political consciousness, right, not one formed out of an academic philosophical point of view as much as one that's a result of your lived experience.
Right.
So, do you consider yourself a revolutionary?
I did not think I was. Due to the way that I function as a human being and the way that I was born, I look at things a lot differently than I'm told I'm supposed to. As it turns out, apparently I am a revolutionary because I believe in the concept of people getting exactly what they deserve. You know what I mean? I believe in the idea of people being treated with some semblance of respect and compassion and maybe even a modicum of, love.
Okay.
Which is, in this society, apparently a radical thought. It's funny, I actually saw a diagram the other day of a line chart, right?
Mm.
And so at the very left side, it's left. At the very right side, it says right. And at the very middle, it says center. And then it shows panel by panel with 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, differentiation starting from 1995 all the way to 2019. And slowly but surely, everything left of, if this is the line, everything left of about the farthest right of the line, everything to the left is extreme left. Everything right up until the point of the very right end side of the line is center, and then everything on the right end of the line is considered right wing. And what I find so funny about that is that all that tells me is mm-hmm. that we are as a culture becoming so jaded and disturbed and perturbed and just so exhausted to the point of apathy that the idea of doing anything for anybody at all is considered liberal or left wing or revolutionary or somehow strange, when in reality it's people forget that there was a time when we had societies that didn't need governance.
Mm.
Like people legitimately think that the concept of quote anarchy unquote, right, is this radical extreme concept of burn everything down and start over again, when in reality it's no, that's just what we used to do. That's the way things worked for a long time in most of the world before, a couple of people got together and said, hey, we can make a business model off of this.
So you're saying that there are models that predate current society of egalitarian, horizontal, decentralized, harmonious existence amongst human beings.
Yeah, that still work to this day too, mind you.
Right.
It's not like they're extinct. So, I know that we like to forget that with real people in them.
Right.
Doing real work and creating real infrastructure.
Okay. So here's a question I want to ask then. Because, like, we talk about society as if it's a monolith. We talk about culture as if it's a monolith. I believe that there are multiple societies that coexist inside this culture that we call the United States of America. I believe there are multiple cultures that coexist. It's a very complex, nebulous thing, this term culture, right?
Right, absolutely.
That said, where do you see us headed in about 5 years?
So, currently, with the way things are going, now that I've calmed down, gotten sober, and have a clear head, I previously believed that we were basically on the brink of a revolutionary war. Now, what I see is just more of the same, except for amplified, right? So, we're developing all this technology, 5G internet access, so that you're able to distract yourself.
By the way, fight against 5G.
We're making it so that, like, for instance, TV providers are becoming a thing of the past. Now, I don't necessarily have a problem with this, but what they're being replaced with is the ability to watch any television show at any time, in any given place, and in any order, and at any rate that you want, ever. Now, that's interesting. Why? Because all that does is allow you the opportunity to, again, distract yourself at any given time of day at as long a length of time as you can.
So this thank you for encouraging this next point that I'm about to highlight, which I've said, some of you have seen me in venues or in classrooms where I brought this up, and that is the fact that if you can get a human being to not be aware of our own surroundings, then what you've created is a target. You've created prey. Because, you know, we need our senses. Those of us that are privileged enough to have all senses available to us, you know, we have to be aware of our environment. And what I've noticed is that I'm also guilty of, you know, when I sit down inside of a commuter vehicle, if I'm not driving, sometimes even if I'm driving, right?
Right.
The first thing I do is I look at my screen. Now, I used to, as a passenger, the first thing I would do would be look out the window. I always wanted the window seat because I wanted to observe my surroundings.
Right.
So now we live in an environment where people walk into oncoming traffic with their earbuds in looking at their screen.
Right.
About to die.
Right.
And so I just want us to be aware, you know, we all grew up with this narrative about crime and urban, you know, environments and so on and so forth. So that's not the narrative I'm trying to reinforce, right?
Right.
The whole white supremacist narrative of the white victim and the dark predator. But what I am saying is that the forces that are driving this lack of awareness of our own environment that's device dependent don't have our interests in mind.
Well, and I also want to bring up a very good point out of a facet of what you just mentioned, which is that, so those part of existing, right, mm-hmm. is perceiving all these things via the senses that we are privileged enough to have. What a coincidence then that the most popular things on the market today to distract you also create a blue light that just so happens to destroy your vision, creates and allows for volume that is so loud that it can destroy your hearing, right?
Come on.
How interesting is it, at a minimum to me, that, like, nowadays, what you are pushed to cope with things like this are things like Coke or cigarettes or booze, or and all these things happen to destroy sensory olfactory glands, other words, smell, mm-hmm. other words, taste. Like, how interesting is it that all of the most popular methodologies of coping with the trauma that we didn't even invent in the first place and that wouldn't need to exist necessarily if we didn't live in the kind of society that we live in are all built to essentially blind, deafen, and dumb you down.
Word. And then I would agree, you know, because I've thought about it as somebody who's been in and out of relationship with addiction, you know, is that the things that we put in our mouths actually mimic the functions that we need to rely on that keep us alive involuntarily, right?
Right.
So smoking, it's like, oh, you need to take a deep breath.
Right.
But instead of taking a deep breath of oxygen, you're actually taking a deep breath of a gas that'll kill you.
Yes, Word. Absolutely.
All right. So, like, I think it's time for the people. They've been listening to us talk, and I hope they appreciate what we're sharing. But I want to play some of the music that's actually an artistic reflection of the type of consciousness that we share. And so we're going to play. We've got two videos out right now, two singles. The first one was Sunlight. We released that on May Day. And the second one we just released a little over a week ago, and that was called Heavy Bag. So why don't we check out Heavy Bag? What do you want to tell the people about Heavy Bag before we play it?
Heavy Bag is an interesting journey for us into the twisted narrative that is the existence of being an artist when it comes down to the immense desire to acquire wealth despite anti-capitalist sentiment. And yet the necessity of having it in order to survive and live in the kind of world that we exist in. And I think that that can be pretty perfectly personified in the video that goes with it to boot, now findable on YouTube.
Yeah, man. Here it goes. Heavy Bag, produced by Theory Has It. Big shout out to Theory Has It. Last of a Dying Breed, Heavy Bag. So that was a good video shoot. We shot that on location. Big shout out to Dazlun. What's the name of his collective of artists?
Street Creatives.
Street Creatives, yeah.
Big shout out to the homie. Lawless and Street Creatives and Lawless America.
Okay.
Young Lawless America.
Young Lawless America, yeah. Big shout out to them. You know, people, I think that, you know, since I've been in this city, there's been so much cultural development within the subculture and community of hip hop that it's just good to see younger people being able to contribute expert skills in video production and different things aside from being rappers that help all of us thrive and that help us get our work out there to the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, it, not to keep harping the same point, but like, isn't it interesting that like something that's intangible that you can't touch, smell, see or really do, something that is that you can manipulate towards any given sense, like art, okay? Mm. It can be visual, it can be sonic, it can be tensile, something you physically touch, et cetera, right? Is something that now the only ways to do it properly in a modern society are being turned from something that you used to own to something you have to rent, right?
Mm.
What I speak of course, is the Adobe Creative Suite that people have been using for generations at this point to do everything. And I do mean literally everything. Cover art, posters, everything. Right?
Graphic, visual. Right.
Anything visual, something sonic, a lot of things that involve writing, signs, etc. This is now something you cannot own anymore.
Yeah, right.
They're in fact trying to like find, sue, and prosecute anybody that is grabbing copies that are old enough that you can own them. Mm. And they're forcing people to rent it, right? Mm. Why would you do that? Well, to just add another level of gatekeeping to the ability for people to capitalize on things that are inside of them instead of products that they have to vie for in a marketplace, force people to want, force people to need, and et cetera, et cetera.
You know what I find remarkable and disturbing? And that in order for me to really cope with it, I often have to step aside and like remove myself and try to observe it as one would observe nature.
Right, right? Absolutely.
In order for me to even do that and to be fascinated by how morbid it is, right?
Right.
I have to act as if I'm separate from nature. Right. So there's a contradiction there,
yes,
right?
Which is
so
weird.
Here's the thing. I use Apple products, right?
Right.
Now, every time I buy a new phone or a new laptop, some of the hardware is different,
right,
as far as the size of the adapter and what it's compatible with.
Right.
Now, in a world where we're trying to ban single-use plastic,
okay,
because of the environmental consequence,
right,
of generations and generations that have these things floating in the ocean that are destroying the biosphere, right?
Right, right.
Why would we recreate and recreate things so that a consumer had to buy a new piece of trash essentially every time they purchased something? Shouldn't that be criminal?
Absolutely, but right. So here's the dilemma, right? If you made that criminal, you are essentially making the concept of the free market criminal. What
Which
I mean by
is.
That is
right.
The well, it is, but like even criminality as a concept is something that is owned by like Western societies in general, right? Like
right.
The idea of an arbitrary list of, anyways. So, here's what I mean by that. When you're talking about Apple, especially in particular, let's note something very interesting that actually harmed them as a business but will help them in the long run. The removal of the audio jack in a phone.
Right.
Why would you do that?
Well, right, because
that
you used to
like
be
that,
able to charge your phone and listen to music at the same time.
You know what I mean? Like that actually makes no business sense.
No.
If you're not a multi-billion dollar business. But if you're a multi-billion dollar business that has influence over a solid piece of the general market in multiple countries, and you do that, you're actually changing culture. It almost has nothing to do with money. So now, if you have cabled headphones, you're poor.
Right.
Period. That's
right.
What it means.
Right.
If you have cabled headphones, you're poor.
It becomes a status symbol.
Right.
Right.
It becomes a status symbol.
Right.
It also makes it less accessible for people that can't afford a wireless pair of headphones. You see
right,
what I'm
right,
saying?
Right.
Now, like, maybe somehow none of these people even realize that that's what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's not purposeful. But at the end of the day, little things like that,
mm-hmm,
that's what shapes an entire culture.
Right. Right. And so the change in the means of production becomes something that is guided by profit motive,
right,
for the consolidation of wealth.
Right.
Which has, whether it was part of the initial intent or not, or a circumstantial thing, it has to do with control
right
over people's lives.
Right.
Right? And over what people consider possible, over what people have access to.
Right.
Right. Now, that said, the technological development of goods and services and technology and hardware and whatever people use, right, in day-to-day life could potentially liberate people in a way that would improve the quality of life, be create a healthier relationship between humans and the natural environment in which we live and that we depend on in order to thrive.
Right.
Right? Yeah. We could be using it that way, but instead we're just creating more garbage and more profit at the same time.
Well, right. No, take VR headsets and actually let's take the fact that you can now listen to music everywhere you go with this little computer in your pocket. Now, we've been able to prove that there are actually forms of therapy. Whether or not they're consistently effective is still under debate, but it has been found that using visual and audio stimulation, percentages of people with post-traumatic stress disorder have been able to recover from massive amounts of trauma. Now, we have the technology at this point where what that means is you could have therapy in your pocket. Mm. You could have therapy every time you go home. But we're not going to invest in that. Do you want to know why? Because at the end of the day, that cuts out the entire market for antidepressants. That cuts out the market for most psychologists. That cuts out the market for like almost, I'd say, a solid half of the drugs that you're going to find on the streets that are in all reality being allowed to be there by the government, right?
Right, right.
By the different authorities at large. Mm-hmm. If they want to get rid of them, they would have done it yesterday. They don't. The point of technology should be to help us. Instead, what it is trying to do currently, at least in the iterations I see, is to make money off of us.
Word. And I'm going to say this last bit of news, just because I've been reflecting on it all day, because as I've been, you know, driving around in the vehicle that uses fossil fuel, contributing to the carbon footprint that's going to kill everything.
Mind you, because we have to, otherwise half of us will be jobless.
Right. So that said, I've been hearing this story about this plane, was it a Malaysian jet airliner, and they got these four guys, Eastern Ukrainian and three Russian dudes, that they're basically saying were responsible for the shooting down of this plane, that they shot down from orders from the Russian government, and they thought they were shooting down a Ukrainian fighter plane, this, that, and the other. But as I'm listening on this, 298 people got killed. Something around there. It's one of those numbers. But as I'm listening to this, I'm thinking, what about the people that made the rocket launcher and the rocket? Are they accountable?
No, but don't you know that apparently that doesn't count.
All right, man. So thanks for answering that question your wisdom. Blast of a Dying Breed. You've been listening to Michael Fletcher and myself talk. The album is out. Brink of Distinction. We played Heavy Bag. The video's on YouTube. Sunlight is also a single on YouTube. I don't have time to play another song, but I want to let everybody know that Mike Capes, Swiggle Mandela, JC Cordetta, and us are going to be at the Bit House Saloon. I'm not telling you to come down there. I'm just letting you know we will be rocking there tomorrow night. It's at 727 Southeast Grand, Portland, Oregon. And it might be nice to see some people down there. Micah, you got anything to say to the people on the way out?
Oh, yeah. Come to the Bit House Saloon tomorrow. I'm not nearly as nice as Mike. Come down. It's going to be insanely historic. It's all local artists. There's no excuses. Support the hip-hop community. Do the right thing.
And thank you for listening to News from the Boo. I'll be back in a couple weeks. And keep supporting K-Boo. One love.
Meet me on the mountain.
KBOO wants you to meet us where the music's at.
You can see awesome live bands like Fruition.
That's right. KBOO wants to send you to a concert this summer.
Just enter the KBOO Summer Music Raffle, where three lucky winners will choose in order from three awesome events.
You could win 2 3-day passes to the Northwest String Summit, July 19th to the 21st.
A pair of Sunday tickets to Pickathon, August 4th.
A pair of tickets to Lord Huron and Shaky Graves at the Oregon Zoo, August 12th.
Tickets are just $5, and if you buy four, you get an extra raffle chance for free.
Enter at kboo.fm/give, or you can buy tickets in person at Music Millennium or Grendel's Coffee.
Deadline to enter is July 7th. See kboo.fm/summermusicraffle for full rules and details.
Enter now for your chance to win.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Four Peaks Music Festival, June 20th through 23rd at Stevenson Ranch in Bend, Oregon. Four Peaks Music Festival is a four-day music event featuring an eclectic array of national, regional, and local bands. Performers include Poor Man's Whiskey, Los Lobos, Sister Sparrow, The Drunken Hearts, and many more. There will also be food, craft vendors, a kid zone, and more. Again, that's the Four Peaks Music Festival, June 20th through 23rd at Stevenson Ranch, 21085 Knott Road in Bend, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
It is 6 o'clock and you are listening to KBOO Community Radio. KBO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners' support from Portland State University, offering a master's degree in urban and regional planning for those who want to shape cities into inclusive, vibrant, and more livable communities. For more information online at www.planningatoregonstate.org. And next up is Free Culture Radio.
Timothy Leary lives. No, he's outside looking. Timothy Leary lives. No, he's outside.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. I'm Doug McVeigh. June 19th is Juneteenth. 45 states and the District of Columbia recognize Juneteenth as a holiday or a holiday observance. Since this edition of Free Culture Radio is being recorded on June 19th, we make a technical departure from our usual coverage of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society to talk about history and contemporary politics. Harry Jones was an author and historian who served as the assistant director and curator of the African American Civil War Freedom Foundation and Museum.